Patrick, you there?
Yeah. How are you?
I'm doing wonderful. We're here talking to Patrick Ruffini, who currently blogs at townhall.com and who was formerly the new media advisor for Rudy Giuliani's presidential campaign. How are you doing today, Patrick?
Very good. How are you?
Great. I was wondering if you could kind of first kick us off here with kind of a brief history of how you got to Giuliani's campaign and then, you know, kind of why you're at Town Hall now.
Sure. You know, I was in the last election cycle. I was at the RNC as the e-campaign director.
So that's 04 then, not 06?
That was 06.
06.
So, yeah, we... I'd like to forget 06, but...
but you can't, huh?
I can't. So,
what was your role at the RNC for 06?
I was the e-campaign director,
okay.
Which was basically managing the web operation, blog outreach, all that jazz.
And then somehow you got rolled into the Giuliani campaign after that.
Yeah, yeah. And, you know, in an advisory role. Now I'm doing my own firm.
So you're of your own firm now. What kind of clients do you have?
A lot of, you know, congressional clients, you know, people looking to use the web, you know, as a strategic vehicle. And I think there's a need for a lot of that, and I know that that'll be part of our discussion today.
Great. So you are the new media advisor for Rudy Giuliani. I was hoping you could tell our viewers kind of, you know, loosely what you did there, and, you know, you might want to talk about that so much. So more broadly, what you think presidential campaigns should be doing in that role. Like, I know, you know, we have, like, Peter Dow is in that role for Hillary Clinton, and Patrick Hines is doing that role for John McCain, Stephen Smith for Mitt Romney. You know, each of the big campaigns has their own person in that new media advisor role. So I was wondering if you could talk a bit about, you know, what they should be doing, what are they doing, and what is not working. What is this new position?
You know, I mean, the people you mentioned, I have enormous respect for all of them. You know, it is kind of soup to nuts. I mean, you know, Pat, obviously on the McCain campaign, does a lot of the blog outreach. I was doing a lot of the blog outreach when I was there.
Which consists of what exactly?
You know, reaching out, you know, when you have conference calls, primarily getting information out there, making sure kind of your surrogates are you know, getting out their books and blog interviews, and you're using the medium to your fullest advantage.
In that role, you're kind of like a cross between a deputy press secretary and like a labor outreach person, kind of.
I'd probably say yeah, because blogs are a little bit of everything. I mean, they're a little activist, they're a little journalist. So you know, you gotta it does blend the roles quite nicely, I think.
And so, you know, do you see any other roles, you know, that the new media advisor needs to be doing or should be doing?
You know, but you got to split it out, I think, between, you know, the people who are talking to the bloggers and the people who are doing the message and the day-to-day kind of rapid response in the blogosphere and the folks who are building the website and doing, you know, doing videos, doing the online fundraising, doing all of the blocking and tackling of a traditional new media campaign. Sometimes people kind of get those two confused. They think, well, we got a blog person, so, you know, why do we need a web person? Or we got a web person, why do we need a blog person? But it's actually two sides of the same coin. And a lot of the guys who are kind of doing the web stuff, you know, the geeky kind of technology stuff, are a little bit more, maybe a little bit more in the background, but their job is just, I think, just as important. And, you know, I've certainly done a little bit of both. So I can relate to that.
Well, what was some of the background stuff you did for the RNC in 06?
Well, I mean, I think just building, I mean, really just rebuilding the website, making sure that all the stuff we did, I mean, I was also on the Bush campaign, making sure all the really cool stuff we did on the Bush campaign got rolled into the RNC, that we had, you know, a robust kind
of... What were the successes for the 04 Bush campaign, since you actually had success there?
I mean, I think we had a tremendous amount of success from recruiting 1.4 million volunteers for the campaign, which was something that people kind of after the fact really appreciated.
What was the online dimension of that, though? I mean, you can spit out those numbers like 1.4 million volunteers.
The online dimensions of that was that the vast majority of those folks were recruited by the web.
And so what exactly did they do for Bush?
These are the people who walked the precincts, made the phone calls, did all kind of the traditional campaign, but they were kind of to a large degree recruited online, and we gave them stuff to do online as well in that vein, which is basically, I mean, I think one of the great successes of that campaign was that after the fact, people kind of realized, you know, people, we had the same debate, you know, who's ahead, who's behind online. We had the same debate back in 04, I remember very vividly. And after the fact, after, you know, we won, and after the fact, people realized, wait a second, you had the right strategy there. I mean, in terms of mobilizing the grassroots, doing house parties, getting people to use the web to contact other voters instead of maybe the Kerry campaign, which was sending, you know, fundraising emails up to, I think, October 29th or something like that. And obviously, you know, that was, you know, that got a lot of headlines, a lot of press. But at the end of the day, people realize, well, wait a second, you know, I think the web effort is multifaceted. It's both money and
its
grassroots.
You know, in 04, you know, people in the Netroots love to talk about, you know, how decentralized it is. You know, they're more about building communities, et cetera, while the conservative blogosphere is more top-down. But, you know, as you just pointed out, in 04, that seemed to help, you know, the Bush campaign, because they were able to direct their web operations, their online operations, into actually doing stuff that would help them at the polls. Whereas there's a whole hodgepodge of groups on the left, from, you know, George Soros' funders group to Move On, who are all doing their own kind of separate projects, but they, you know, they're kept reaching the same people in Ohio and all the districts that, you know, ended up mattering, and there was no, you know, direct strategic focus to it that seemed to end up hurting them in the end.
Yeah, I agree with that. I mean, you had obviously 527s doing things. You know, you had obviously Move On, which, you know, I mean, I kind of go back and forth. I mean, I wrote a post on this the other day, which is like everyone wants to create the Move On of the right, but if you actually, first of all, I don't think you can create anything of, quote-unquote, of the right. I think it has to be new, it has to be different, or else how is it going to catch on if you're just copying something else? It would be my response to those folks. Not that a lot of the things that Move On is doing it aren't great and you can't do them, but on a larger kind of strategic level, I do kind of have questioned the efficacy of Move On, because they had this disjointed turnout operation which wasn't connected at all to the Democratic Party. And frankly, I mean, they've used their money to air a lot of ads, which I can tell you, just, you know, maybe this is just my perspective on it. I don't think they're any good.
Yeah,
maybe someone on the left
polarizing.
Can weigh in on that.
Although there was a study I linked to this week by some Princeton either economists or political scientists that showed Move On turnout effort did boost turnout in their targeted precincts by 7%. That doesn't mean their overall strategy of turnout was good, or that, you know, it could have been better directed strategically if it was folded in within the Kerry campaign. But to be fair, from the one study that I've seen, they did boost turnout. So I guess I'll defend them a little bit there.
Yeah. I mean, I think turnout was up all the way across the board, and it was way up more than we expected it to be in both areas. So, you know, certainly, you know, tip of the hat there if it's warranted.
So, looking at the success Bush had in 04, and taking those lessons to primary season 08, are there any campaigns on the Dem or White House side that you see effectively leveraging, you know, kind of the new media blog world?
You know, it's kind of seemed to tell for, you know, I think for what we were talking about, which is kind of the nuts and bolts of getting people to the polls. I mean, it's still
early for that.
It's still pretty early to analyze that part of it. I mean, I'm sure that, you know, I mean, I know a lot of the people at the different campaigns, so, you know, knowing all of them and knowing many of them, at least on the Republican side, I can tell you, you know, those are probably, that is probably going to be very high on the list. But right now, I mean, obviously, I mean, you're seeing the development of social media as being kind of the big buzzword of the 08 cycle.
For example?
YouTube,
okay.
MySpace, Facebook, as being, and, you know, there's a big debate, you know, is this going to be, you know, is that kind of a false flag? Is that where the action
well,
is really
going to
be?
Well, I'm sure you have an opinion on it, Patrick, so what is it?
Sorry, go ahead. I missed that.
I said I'm sure you have an opinion on, you know, Facebook, my page, YouTube, and the efficacy of them. So let's have you go ahead and take a position.
I think they are effective, actually. I'll probably differ from some folks on that, but I think that you got to figure out what are they effective for. And I think they're effective at reaching kind of your influentials, your volunteers, your folks who, you know, well maybe not necessarily. You don't necessarily need to motivate them to get out and vote. They're already going to vote.
Would you group all those sites together, though? MySpace, Facebook, and YouTube. It seems to me they all have kind of like their own different segments. And
that's true. I mean, there was that study, and I'm sure you saw it, that came out a week ago about kind of the demographics on the different websites, on MySpace being kind of a more, not to use the pejorative term, but the more downscale demographic, Facebook being kind of more upscale,
right.
College kids, folks who I would call them the kind of the young influentials. YouTube is obviously, I mean, that showed, I mean, we were dealing in YouTube, you know, heavily in the last election cycle, so you don't need to tell me about that. And certainly I think that's more of an across-the-board type thing, and it's interesting because it's very accessible. You know, anyone who visits a blog or anyone who visits any kind of site is, you know, doesn't necessarily need to be part of the, quote, YouTube community to participate. So it's something that, you know, has been very effective in terms of distributing video
You talked
presumably.
About that study about the different demographics of Facebook and MySpace. And since you're making a kind of an influential volunteer argument for the efficacy of the social networking sites, would you then extrapolate and conclude that Facebook would therefore be the superior tool to MySpace since it has a more desirable demographic?
You know, I think it's kind of seemed to tell. I mean, I actually would harken back. I noticed something is interesting. This was in the Philadelphia. I used to go to school there, so that's hence my interest in it. But this was in the Philadelphia Democratic primary. And I looked at the number of MySpace friends to the ratio of votes that the candidates received. And in a few cases, it was like one in ten of the – I mean, literally somebody got 60,000 votes and they got 6,000 MySpace friends. Think about that in a general election where it's 6 million. That would be the equivalent of 6 million MySpace.
So did you find this as a trend beyond just a couple of candidates? I mean, what kind
of... There were some candidates had more, some candidates had less. Incidentally, the winning candidate had less of a ratio of support of supporters. Maybe he just got started late. I don't know. But it was interesting because you would think that this was a primary, right?
Right.
So this is a Democratic primary where only a few people, I mean... Young people will generally not vote, so I would imagine that all of those people were outside the traditional turnout universe that were on MySpace. So I would think that would have been something like that might have been a proving ground to see did these people vote. And I don't know if maybe not. I mean, it was obviously the winner didn't get, you know, the winner of that primary, Michael Nutter, didn't, you know, have as many MySpace friends as some of the other candidates, but he did just fine, and did just fine, I think, with that demographic as well.
Did you end up doing a post on that, or you just noticed that from the election returns?
I may have posted it as a comment somewhere.
Ah.
But
we'll have to find that for the blogging headers out there.
But it's out there.
So one GOP candidate that has had a very, you know, kind of new media focus, even though he's not declared yet, has been Fred Thompson. I know you've been paying attention to his rollout both when you were with Giuliani and now that you're over there at Town Hall. How effective do you think that's been, and how long do you think he can last in this, you know, only posting in a red state, going on Sean Hannity world before he has to join the rest of the field at the debates?
You know, it's been interesting. I actually have my cigar here, holding it up to the camera, just paying homage to Fred Thompson. I thought,
I'm not Michael Moore, so I don't know how effective that's going to be.
you don't need to worry about that. And but you know, I think you know, I think it's very interesting the strategy he's trying, which is it's very decentralized from the standpoint of he's going to go out and go to Powerline to get his message out. He's going to go out and go to Red State to get his message out. He's going to do a lot of blog media. And, you know, I don't think even they believe that potentially, oh, this is going to reach, you know, millions and millions of voters. But what it does do is probably reach, you know, the influentials. I mean, it probably does reach the folks who are paying attention to this campaign. And that may be, that number may be in the hundreds of thousands out of a primary electorate of 10 or so million. So it's not a mass persuasion.
Although
tool.
When you're talking about influentials, you don't even think that you're just, you know, reaching those. You're hoping those influentials then go talk to
right.
Their
they'll go talk to other people. But I think more crucially, I mean, because I mean, yeah, they talk to other people. Although, Con, I don't know how many non-political people you've talked to today. I certainly haven't talked to many. So I love this myth that, you know, we're all going to go out and talk to, you know, 10,000 friends and relatives, and maybe that's...
My wife could care less about politics.
Right, mine too. So, yeah, but I think what it does do, though, is influence the media. And I think it influences you guys more than anything, and through which then I think that the tenor, the inflection of media coverage then goes out and informs, you know, a lot of the rest of the electorate.
So really almost more debate setting than anything else, framing, if you will.
Right, right.
Keeping on Thompson, you know, as well as he's been doing, he ran into some problems this week with lobbying reform, or not lobbying reform, but his past lobbying, and specifically his an LA Times piece about him possibly making some phone calls on behalf of a pro-choice group back in the mid-90s. Do you think this story is going to hurt him at all, or do you think he handled it well?
You know, it's I kind of have to, I mean, yeah, but, you know, at the same time that he's not necessarily the first candidate to be attacked on maybe changing one of his positions in the past. He's not necessarily the first candidate to have been attacked for maybe in the eyes of kind of the pro-life base of the party, an imperfect record on the issue.
Right. So after, you know, Mitt Romney, of course, after Brownback,
right.
After Giuliani, you know,
yeah,
at some
I mean,
point it's just like...
You just got to question who's left. I mean, if that's... I mean, especially with McCain, you know, obviously looking like he might be fading back. You know, who is left that has a perfect record that, you know, is a serious candidate? And the answer is increasingly no one. So I think that in that sense, that'll probably fall flat a little bit. And where exactly, I mean, after you've trashed McCain, you've trashed Giuliani, you've trashed Romney, you know, I think even some folks, I mean, they may be a little bit disillusioned, but I don't think they're necessarily going to go, all right, now we have to go to a fifth guy? I mean, how's that going to
well,
work?
Well, let me ask you this then. What's so bad about Huckabee?
You know, I think it's an interesting question.
I mean, you know, Brownback, you know, loves to fight with Romney and the rest, but Brown,
right.
But Huckabee also has an impeccable...
Well, the problem, I think, I mean, I would say this is my putting on my insider DC hat, which is, you know, normally I try not to put that on. But putting on my insider hat for a second here, the fact is he hasn't necessarily been as serious, I think, about building kind of the organization, which is reflected in the fact that, you know, he only raised like $500,000 in the first quarter, and maybe, I mean, he did a lot better in the second quarter, I think, but still far behind. And that hasn't been, and I think by all accounts, it's not something that's necessarily that he's necessarily tried to do. So maybe, you know, this might fall under, you know, the life is not fair kind of category here. I mean, ultimately, does he have the capacity to wage a winning campaign that even if he does shock people in Iowa, even if he does shock people, comes in a strong second or third in New Hampshire? I mean, just thinking about that, is that going to provide enough juice to leapfrog, you know, potentially three very strong, high name ID national candidates?
I agree with you. It's still a long shot. You know, it's just that after every debate, you know, I'm plugging through the conservative blogs, and it's just like, you know, people at Red State love Mike Huckabee's performance. Yeah. The people at the corner love Mike Huckabee's performance.
Yeah, my favorite, I mean, if you look at that role for me, my favorite would be Duncan Hunter. I mean, the guy who has no shot, but seems to make sense. I think Huckabee is a little bit too, I don't know, he seems a little bit not too folksy, but just when he's talking about the war on terror, I honestly want to hear a down-home anecdote. You know, but I feel that way. I felt that same way about certainly him at some points and other candidates as well.
But still, you know, so to just kind of not build an organization, no other silver bullet as to why Huckabee's not catching fire yet, huh?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's again, I think there's only a certain amount of political oxygen out there. And, you know, the question is, are you in the right place at the right time to capture it? At one point, I thought he could have been like the John McCain of this cycle. I mean, think about it. He has these positions that you guys in the evil mainstream media, you know, love. I mean, on some level, I mean, he's particularly on, I mean, he's taken an unorthodox position on immigration. You know, on some of these, he's disagreed with the base on certain issues, not on the social issues, but, you know, on some of the economic issues. So I would think, like, maybe, you know, I had thought maybe at some point about a year ago, hey, you know, maybe the media, maybe he'll become the media darling of this cycle, but I don't know if he's done that yet.
Well, it's hard to be the media darling and be the conservative base's darling, but, you know, everyone talks about how, you know, after George Allen got McCaucus out of the race, you know, there was no, you know, down-home Southern Republican pro-life candidate left. And, you know, then, you know, people thought it might be McCain or someone stepped in that role. But at the same time, it's like, well, Huckabee's been there the whole time, and I just can't figure out why, you know, if – I guess this is back to framing. I guess I just really never buy into the fact that there has to be someone in that role to begin with. And Huckabee hasn't caught on in that role.
I think there wasn't, that role was vacant, and you're maybe seeing Fred Thompson, as unlikely as that might seem, fill that role. But you're right in that, you know, it always seems that about 25% of the Iowa caucus vote is reserved for guys like that, the guys who have no shot, you know, who, whether it was Pat Robertson in 88 all the way up to, you know, Gary Bauer and Alan Keyes, who I think did not bad. I mean, I don't know if they came anywhere close, but they did not bad for where they were nationally. So it always seems like there's room for a breakout candidate. I mean, my prediction has long been potentially Brown back 20% in Iowa, but, you know, I think with the addition of Thompson in the race, that might be a little bit more, I mean, it might be a little bit harder to pull off just because people have been searching for so long, and they may think they have found that person. Doesn't mean he's going to get the nomination.
So I know you're a Giuliani guy.
Yeah.
But, you know, for those, you know, people who look at Thompson and say, you know, what is this guy's issue? You know, what is his appeal? He doesn't really have a platform so far. He's just out there making Michael Moore videos. Why do you think he has been able to kind of explode on the scene without, you know, barely lifting a finger?
Yeah, you never know that, but I do think that, you know, in politics, sometimes, you know, issues are overrated as kind of a yardstick, and, you know, you could make whatever comment on that that you'd like, but, you know, people certainly like his personality. People like Rudy's personality as well. They certainly like, you know, his style and the fact that, I mean, the Michael Moore video, and, you know, while certainly not every voter saw that video, you know, you certainly saw how, you know, how well received that was. But, you know, I do think people are kind of, you know, potentially hungry for an alternative. You know, it's been, you know, there's been no traditional rock-ripped conservative in the race. George Allen could have been that guy had he decisively won re-election, which obviously I don't need to tell you he didn't. You know, potentially I think that's the best reason I think I can come up with.
How much do you think it has to do with name ID? I mean, you know, whenever I look at the polls, I see, you know, Rudy Giuliani out in front and Thompson, and then, well, we'll get to McCain in a second. But it seemed everybody who was out there, you know, were just kind of, they have other dimensions too, but they were also just basically celebrity candidates. You know, Rudy being famous for 9/11, Fred Thompson being famous for his movie career, Hunt for Red October, Law and Order, etc. McCain just for having been on the scene for so long. how much do you think was just like, oh my God, here's a well-famous known guy who we can, you know, is an empty vessel for whatever hopes and dreams you want to put into?
Yeah, I mean, in that sense, he might be the Obama of the field. Who knows? I mean, it does kind of put politics in perspective. Think about this. I mean, you know, I mean, obviously people know him from his movie roles, but I don't necessarily think, I mean, he hasn't been in that many movies lately. I mean, he's been on Law and Order, which I don't know what kind of ratings Law and Order gets, but I know it's, I don't know if it's anywhere close to, like, American Idol or anywhere close to being the most watched show in the country, and probably some fan, Law and Order fan, will probably write to me and correct me on that. But it's an interesting perspective that someone like that, who's basically got a modest role in, you know, a decently rated TV drama, can step onto the scene and be second. You know, I mean, obviously some of that has to do with, I think, his personality. But obviously, I mean, I don't know how well people know him from his time in the Senate. Or how well people know him. I think they do know him from his films. I think they do know him from TV. And it's interesting to see how someone like that can so quickly can vault to, hey, he's got more name ID than Mitt Romney. It kind of puts all this political thing in perspective, you know, when you think about it.
It does. So moving on to the collapse of John McCain. I kind of had a running, you know, subhead on the Blogometer for a couple weeks before the fundraising news came in, and it was, you know, what was your favorite moment of the McCain era? Kind of a sarcastic slap at predicting his doom, even though it hasn't happened yet. And of course,
McCain death watch.
Now it pretty much has. Were you surprised that it happened this soon? And more importantly, what do you attribute it to? And after that, you know, what do you think it says about the future of the GOP field?
I would say I'm not surprised that it happened. I'm surprised that it happened this soon. And maybe that's kind of a natural cautiousness, you know. I've never agreed with the assessment that he was really the front runner. I thought he would have been a strong candidate potentially. I mean, I think maybe in a unique situation could have gotten the nomination, but I never agreed with this assessment. You know, he's going to raise, you know, so much money and utterly dominate the field. I mean, this is a guy.
I never could figure out where that money was going to come from.
Right. And this is a guy who never raised any money out of cycle. I mean, people were talking about him not running for re-election in 2004 because he hadn't raised any money, and all of a sudden he's going to go out and get all this money. In retrospect, now obviously in retrospect, it seems obvious. It did seem though that they were signing up a lot of these Rangers and Pioneers. People were just going to go with the guy they thought could win, and the fact that none of that came through, I mean, it was a mild shock to me. I mean, I thought, you know, he'd raise a lot of money, but at the end of the day, primary voters would not really take kindly to him because of his stances on immigration, Gang of 14, campaign finance, the whole litany of issues. I mean, it's not just one issue. But in the end, even the donor base wasn't with him.
Let me stop you right there for a second, because a lot of people look at Rudy Giuliani as being sympathetic to immigration, someone who... mayor of New York. How was Rudy able to, you know, sidestep the immigration furor and, you know, position himself for McCain to get throttled by it while Giuliani appears, you know, so, you know, pro-security?
You know, I think it does come down to personal style. I mean, this is somebody who, you know, even when he's McCain, even when he shared conservative positions, has gone out of his way seemingly to anger the conservative base, and Rudy is someone who, you know, doesn't agree with you, may not agree with you on every issue, but he's someone that you like and you can trust, and he's kind of he seems to be at least a straight shooter, and he's kind of open about his opinion. He doesn't really try and yell at you or those famous kind of McCain outbursts, off the Senate floor.
Yeah, so, Rudy never tries to out-moralize you with his, you know,
right.
I care about these people more than you do kind of stuff.
Right, and I think that again goes back to, you know, it's maybe not necessarily the positions on the issues as much as your personal style and the kind of the righteousness I think people saw in McCain. So it's still early yet. I mean, I think there may be a small glimmer of hope. I mean, let's see how his poll numbers start holding up, and they seem to be holding up, and maybe this is kind of a beltway maelstrom, but it's hard to see, you know, how he runs this kind of
bare-bones
campaign.
It's not just a beltway maelstrom. I mean, he's, you know, hemorrhaging staff in all the big states. Let alone the guys getting arrested for solicitation in Florida, he's got people, law-abiding staffers, quitting too.
Right, and I think, I mean, it's a question, I mean, can a guy get elected without staff, you know? We're about to see, I guess. Probably not, but who knows? Maybe he'll prove us wrong and, you know, dramatically slash campaign payrolls in the future.
Now, I know you've been talking about how McCain was the front runner, well, at least that some people in the Beltway felt that way. And, of course, George Allen was at one point considered the front runner. And you have a post up on Town Hall today taking issue with the fact that National Journal now has Romney tied with Giuliani as the front runner for the GOP nomination. And I wanted to give you a second to bash insiderness and the Romney's chances.
Well, I found that interesting because if you actually look, I mean, I follow the trading sites pretty religiously, InTrade and the others. And if you look
But InTrade's the biggest one, right?
InTrade's the biggest one, so, you know, I obviously pay the most attention to them. But if you look at InTrade, you know, Mitt Romney has certainly been on the downslope in the last couple of weeks. I mean, he was up there, I think, almost tied. I mean, it was almost a four-way tie maybe 3 or 4 weeks ago or something like that before kind of the McCain money story started coming out. You know, lately it's been Giuliani has risen back, Thompson has risen back, Romney's now at 20%. I think it's about a 40-40-20 split in terms of likelihood of getting the nomination. So it's interesting that is supposed to be sort of an insider prediction market in terms of people are putting down real money and betting, you know, and effectively on who's going to win. And you've got the D.C. insider saying, no, it's going to be McCain. It's going to be Romney. Or potentially more likely to be Romney. And you got to kind of, I stepped back and said, how'd that McCain thing work out for you? I mean, initially McCain was the prohibitive front, I mean, not even just the front runner, the prohibitive front runner with this audience, and that kind of spilled out into some of the trading markets. But they don't seem to be following that cue and are still rating, I think, Thompson in terms of the Thompson Romney split. I think they've got him flipped.
Have there been any, you know, studies done on how well InTrade has done? I mean, I know, you know, looking back in just 2006, they, you know, really didn't turn right in the right direction on the then takeover of the House or Senate until very, very late, and I think they got the Senate wrong.
Yeah, I think I'd have to go back and look. Look, I think you've got to potentially take a look at take that even InTrade with a grain of salt. I mean, I take the insiders maybe 2 grains of salt, and I take InTrade with a grain of salt. Because I think fundamentally what they are is not this hugely predictive value. I mean, I just don't know. It seems to me it's impossible to predict. Obviously, I mean that's obvious. But it's impossible to predict how 10 million people, 100 million people, how exactly they are going to come down. But what it does do, it seems, is they're basically, I mean, I would say conventional wisdom aggregators. I mean, they're better than polls, probably, because they tell you more about intensity of support, maybe money, some of the developments in the campaign.
But it's still just people guessing, right? I mean, how does it tell you about intensity of support?
Well, I do think people discount, like people for the longest time discounted Rudy, for instance, I would say. I mean, people said he's got no shot of winning. I mean, yeah, it supports a mile wide.
Well, as I guess in a card-carrying member of the mainstream media, I don't think it was so much that people didn't think that he, you know, had a long shot. People just didn't think he was going to run.
Right, and that was obviously, I mean, how do you predict, obviously, in that case, how do you predict what one guy is going to do? You know, maybe you could, the case could be made that, hey, this is the electorate. You could probably predict what the electorate's going to do. But ultimately, the inputs that are going into InTrade are polling, conventional wisdom, kind of the media buzz, and they're not really divining, going out and talk. Again, it's the political operatives talk. I mean, the political junkies, they don't talk to their friends. They're watching C-SPAN all day. So I think they're taking those inputs.
I don't know about that. I mean, the insiders I know, you know, have people on the ground in you know, Iowa, have no people, you know, reporters, precinct captains in New Hampshire. Yeah. And they are talking to those people.
Well, I think, yeah. I mean, I don't want to be unfair in that regard. I do think, like, you're talking to, when you're talking to folks in Iowa, but they are still talking to the influentials in Iowa. Iowa's a little bit of a different beast, I'd say, because it's such a tight tight caucus universe. I mean, you pretty much know who's going to vote in that caucus. Let's talk maybe about New Hampshire. I remember I was up in New Hampshire for Bush in 2000. We got killed, and everybody thought, yeah, we're probably going to lose. I mean, I remember being up there, but maybe by 3, 4, 5 points, nobody could have predicted that John McCain would have won by 19 points
right. In
New Hampshire. I mean, that was just not on anybody's radar screen. Just like, I mean, maybe it's the outcome of some races in 06. I mean, that just was not on anybody's radar screen. I think it's great for telling us the snapshot of where we are now. I don't necessarily think it's really predictive at all, to be quite honest with you.
The insider's poll or the in-trade?
The in-trade. So I don't think we have any we haven't gotten a perfect tool yet.
So moving away from whether or not the insider's poll or in-trade is better, your post also went into the case against Romney getting the nomination, not whether or not he'd be a good candidate. So let me kind of make the pro-Romney case, and then you shoot it down here.
Yeah.
Romney is ahead in Iowa and New Hampshire, the first two states. He's not well-known nationally. Most people have no idea who he is. Where Romney has spent money on ads telling his story, spending the money to raise his name ID, which is in Iowa and New Hampshire, he has gone from third and fourth place to first place in those two states. After Romney wins Iowa and New Hampshire, he gets a big bump nationally. He starts spending money in the other big states, and after people start hearing the story, know who he is in those states, he does well on, Giga Tuesday, Titanic Tuesday, whatever people are calling it right now. And, after that, he's going to have Iowa, New Hampshire, a couple of, bigger states on Tuesday, and Giuliani and Thompson are on the wrong end of a delegate count.
Yeah, I think, obviously I think that's the premise, certainly behind a lot of the Romney buzz right now. I would say this. I mean, he's number one in Iowa and New Hampshire right now, which means he couldn't really possibly be doing any better.
He can only go down.
He can only go down. I mean, obviously, and that's the problem. I mean, have they peaked too soon? Is the question. I mean, obviously, they have a lot of ads. But none of the other candidates have aired any ads, and I think it's always easy to move the numbers when no one else is advertising.
None of the top tier candidates. Duncan Hunter's been out there.
Maybe Duncan Hunter. I don't know. But
Rudy has.
Yeah, but Rudy McCain. I don't see where McCain's going to get the money to do that. But Rudy hasn't. McCain hasn't. Thompson obviously hasn't. And do you see that number those caucus numbers kind of even up? Once, you have three or four candidates on TV constantly, has Romney bought himself kind of a permanent advantage in those states? I mean, I would kind of, to use somewhat of an obscure example, Dick DeVos in Michigan, huge self-funding candidate last cycle, did a lot of ads, I think it was May or June, I mean, it was very early in the cycle, got out to a 4 or 5 point lead, and then lost by 15 points, got kind of swept out by the tidal wave. But because he was able to run those ads, he rose in the polls, and but that poll result was 20 points off of where he was eventually on election day. Look, I think they probably have a very strong organization. I mean, they probably, and I wrote this in my post, they probably scared people out of Iowa right now. I don't see how. Or at least right now, how folks are going to kind of tiptoe back, and who's going to be the first to kind of tiptoe back into Iowa as a result of Romney's early strength there. I do think kind of the big battleground may become New Hampshire at this point, because, I mean, if everyone's kind of expecting Romney to win Iowa, the question is, does he win New Hampshire with McCain's weakness, first of all? And you know, him being next door. If he loses this, I mean, if he loses the state next door to him, that's, I think, very tough, I would say, for him. So I think
it's a strength. He's built up Iowa, New Hampshire, but in another sense, he's backed himself into a corner, and then if he loses either, he's pretty much done.
Yeah.
So he's got that hurdle. So in his last 5 minutes here, I want to touch bases with you on the Republicans being behind online. I know, you know, you've written a number of posts on the subject, and I was wondering if you could tell us, you know, why you think they are behind. Well, first of all, make the case that they are, and then second, kind of explain what your theory is to why that is.
We're behind online. I'm not taking that line down. You know, I think people have got to kind of calm down a little bit on this question, because what you're talking about, I think there, first of all, let me back up. I think there's probably some merit to the arguments that are being made that Republicans are behind. You could toss out any
number.
Well,
let me you know, put some metrics out there for you.
Right.
You know, they're getting outraised online by like 5-1. As someone who's always looking at YouTube numbers and Technorati and Alexa numbers, you know, the traffic is like also like, you know, 5, sometimes 10-1. There's just a lot more eyeballs and money flowing through to the Democratic side than there is the GOP side.
Well, first of all, I wouldn't agree with that characterization of 5-1. I mean, maybe, you know, I mean, 2-1, maybe 2-1, 3-1 sometimes on the outside, maybe what I've been seeing. But yeah, I mean, you know, at the same time, right, we're arguing over kind of semantics at that level. First of all, I think it's also interesting. I don't think Hillary or Edwards have released online fundraising numbers for the second quarter.
Edwards has. I don't have them at the tick of my finger, but I know.
I mean, you can see what Hillary did as well. We also don't know what Fred Thompson has done in that. I mean, I was one of the first to break the story on Town Hall that he had raised something like $300,000 in his first 24 hours of being announced and having a website up, which if it were to hold, would portend a very, very strong, you know, at least start for him online. So I think in that respect, it might be soon to tell. However, I mean, I'll say this. I do think that it is a factor. I mean, to the extent that it's a factor of anything, of the political environment right now, which is obviously not favorable to Republicans. You've had a number of polls say, you know, Republicans are just not as energized about their candidates. You've actually had a number of polls say, there was one, the New York Times poll, which of 18 to 29-year-olds, which said something like about 18 or 20% each of that demographic was excited, I mean, quote, unquote, excited about Hillary or Obama. Contrast, the Republican candidates were way low on that. I think Edwards was also way low. But I think that, again, that's an enthusiasm issue. And I don't think that's necessarily, you know, they're all Democrats are all geeks and they're all online and they all happen to congregate there. I mean, I think, you know, there might be some of that on blogs, but I don't think blogs are the be-all, end-all, and particularly in presidential politics for the purposes of our discussion here. But I do think, again, it's the environment. I think I think people aren't necessarily as excited. I mean, it will be interesting to see if Hillary is the nominee. You know, what Republicans do then, you know, if they can't get excited about Hillary as the nominee and you have a relatively, you know, decent Republican candidate. Well, first of all, you had John Kerry. People certainly turned out for him against Bush. So,
are you trying to say that Democrats weren't excited about John Kerry?
And they weren't excited. They didn't love John Kerry, but, you know, they seem to have at least a decent performance. But, you know, the question is, can Republicans get excited online or offline against Hillary? You know, and if we can't, you know, what are we in business for? So I have to believe that they will, to at least some extent, and will to probably in a much greater degree than they are now.
So if I had to bet right now, I would bet that Hillary would be the nominee.
Right.
But if it was Obama, do you think some of that would be mitigated? Do you think, you know, there would be less jump-started motivation, jump-started enthusiasm to beat an Obama as there would be to beat a Hillary?
You know, I think that's an interesting question. The question is, a lot of people didn't know John Kerry by the first, you know, early in the election cycle last time. I mean, you had a bunch of, it was kind of in some sense resembles a little bit the Republican field now in terms of, you know, no one was really breaking 20% in the polls. I mean, it was very unsettled. And he kind of rallied in the end, but he was very aggressively defined in the general election. So through talk radio, through blogs, through the media ultimately, and through paid advertising. So he was aggressively defined.
But at the same time, it wasn't like people turned out in 2004 to stop John Kerry. Whereas what you're saying is what might save the GOP in 2008 is Republicans turning out to stop Hillary.
Yeah.
And so, you know, I guess what I'm asking is, do you think something could be replicated that there would be a force of people turning out to stop Obama? Because I just don't see there being as strong a built-in, you know, Obama's going to ruin us all as there is, oh, my God, here comes Hillary.
But I think fundamentally, I mean, at some level, it's kind of secondary. Because, I mean, obviously, I mean, you don't want to be the guy who's kind of constantly against, you know, the other. I mean, you don't want to be the guy who's just against the other guy. And we saw how well that worked out for Kerry in 04. So I think there is a limit to kind of this Hillary. I mean, I think it will be useful for maybe, you know, for Republicans maybe to gin people up a little bit more.
So maybe a jump start for the car, which is still going to win the race.
It might be a jump start, but I don't think it's going to cross the finish line. I mean, ultimately, you need to have a nominee who, you know, is likable and people can trust and people actually like the guy and want to turn out for him.
So, and who, and I forget, who do you think that is for the Republicans?
You know, I think, you know, I've obviously been a Rudy guy, so I like him. You know, I think it could potentially be any, I mean, I think it could potentially, but frankly, be all of them. I don't think that any of these guys are bad guys. And I think, you know, so I do think they have that appeal. I mean, some of these guys don't have the name ID, and may be behind in the polls because of that. But generally, I mean, if you look at our candidates are performing a lot better than our party brand is right now.
Yeah, all of them are.
Yeah, so, I mean, even Romney, you know, he's made, everyone makes the argument, you know, he can't win. So the question is, Kerry, again, you know, in 04, Rose, I mean, nobody thought he could beat Bush, and all of a sudden, he's ahead right after he wins Iowa. So the question is, one of these guys is going to have to count on that kind of boost that comes out of the primary to really help him take on Hillary in the general.
Fair enough. And on that note, that these aren't all bad guys, we'll go ahead and end it with you.
All right. Thank you.
Okay, Pat.